Good afternoon. I would like to address the general theme of order and liberty in the Hispanic world by drawing attention to Spain's current experiment in home rule. In many areas of our Western world, the crises of the modern state has led to conflicts in recent decades between the central government and the regions. Thus, Spain's current experiment in home rule is of great interest in many countries. There are lessons to learn. Spain's experiment addresses the nation's age-old polarity between the central government and regional aspirations, and it does so in a unique way and on a grand scale. During Juan Carlos I's reign, Hispano-America's Madre Patria has made a tremendous effort to create a balance between national order, uniformity, centralization on the one hand, and regional liberty and diversity on the other. The Spanish government has allowed the various areas in the country to coalesce as they see fit and to determine, to some extent, the structure of their own internal governments. This grand experiment, however, comes after a very long history of tensions and conflicts. The quest for centralization of government, for juridical uniformity, fiscal equalization, national rather than regional policies and programs formed an almost unbroken trend in Spain and started, as our first speaker was suggesting, in the 16th century, shortly after Ferdinand and Isabel united the Hispanic kingdoms in a loose federation in the 15th century. These kingdoms were Castile, Aragon, and Navarre. Castile was by far the largest, and it had the least developed internal government of the three. Castile included, however, the three small provinces of the Basque country, or Euskal Herria. The Basques had a very well-developed and rather democratic system of provincial and local government. When the Basques negotiated the union of their land, Euskal Herria and Castile, in previous centuries, they made sure their self-government would be respected by the Castilian government. The Crown of Aragon consisted of four distinct units with their respective political institutions and laws, as we just heard a little bit about: Aragon proper, Catalonia, Valencia, and the Balearic Islands. These states all had the institutional mechanisms that allowed them to limit the power of the central government, and the oath, si no, no, which we just heard about, was one of the great examples of that. The tiny kingdom of Navarre, where I lived as a teenager, had a long history of looking out for itself in spite of its small size. Well, in the Renaissance, centralization of Castile was quite easy, for reasons we can't go into now. Attempts to centralize the rest of the country, as well as to Castilianize it, two different things, proceeded slowly for almost 500 years under absolute monarchs of the Habsburg dynasty, under enlightened despots of the House of Bourbon, and under constitutional sovereigns in the last century of the same family. The Spanish peoples resisted this process. In any given generation, a large number of Spaniards rejected the quest for order at the expense of political liberty, and also they were asked to give up their cultural amalgamation, their cultural, and to be amalgamated into the general Castilian ways, and they resisted. They defended their regional laws, their parliaments and other intermediate institutions, their law courts, their fiscal arrangements and their customs. This is to say, they defended their fueros. Language has also been a serious bone of contention. For almost three centuries, Madrid tried to impose Spanish, castellano, on peoples who preferred to speak Catalan, Galician, or Basque. Resistance to centralization, the defense of the fueros, took different forms over this long period. Spain has a great body of intellectual work done by jurists, political philosophers, and historians in defense of what we in the United States would call states' rights. Politicians lobbied and negotiated with Madrid periodically. Popular protests, civil disobedience, draft dodging, harassment, and terrorism have been common. Uprisings, civil wars, and secessionist movements involved large percentages of the population in the areas in question, took many lives, and seriously affected the economy. There has actually been an alternate head of state governing part of Spain in defiance of Madrid on four different occasions. The first two were in Catalonia and occurred in the 17th and early 18th centuries. They ended with the Crown of Aragon's complete loss of all political autonomy in 1716. After losing their fueros, the people of northeastern Spain, and especially the Catalans, challenged Madrid time and again in the hopes of getting their fueros reinstated. They developed a strong tendency to support any political movement that would promise to restore the old fueros, or to work with them to create some new system of home rule. In the 19th century, Catalonia fought against the central government in no less than six wars. The Basque provinces and Navarre retained their fueros much longer than the old Crown of Aragon. In the 19th and early 20th centuries, when liberal, centralizing governments in Madrid chipped away at their liberties, the Basque and Navarrese supported five Spanish Bourbon princes in a row who challenged the rights of their relatives in Madrid to the throne of Spain, and who also offered a different political program. So did many Catalans and many Aragonese. The first prince in question, by the way, they were all four out of these five princes were named Carlos, so it's kind of confusing. The first prince in question promised to uphold the fueros where they existed. The second one promised to reinstate those of the Crown of Aragon. The last three claimants also wanted to sponsor development of autonomous institutions in part of the old Kingdom of Castile that could barely remember their history of self-government. Two of these Carlist claimants, or pretenders to the throne of Spain, actually governed part of the country for a total of 10 years in the 1830s and the 1870s. The state run by these princes covered approximately one-fifth of Spain. In defiance of Madrid, on both occasions, the Carlist establishment was run according to each province's fueros, at least as much as was possible in times of war. The end result, of course, they lost. The end result was that both claimants had to leave the country. More importantly, Madrid abolished the fueros of the Basque provinces and did away with the Cortes, or Parliament, of Navarre. Not long after the Carlists were defeated in 1876, resentment at the loss of political autonomy led to the creation of a secessionist movement in the Basque provinces. Catalonia followed shortly thereafter. In the 20th century, separatists split between conservatives and Marxists. Thus, for example, the Basque terrorist group known worldwide since the 1960s by its initials, ETA, or ETA, as we say in Spain, is Marxist. Many Basque nationalists do not support it. In spite of the efforts of the Spanish regions of the North and Northeast to defend their political freedom and their traditional way of life, the only reversals in the Spanish state's long trend toward complete centralization and massification were two short-lived republics. The first Spanish Republic in 1873 and 1874 was meant to be a federal system. However, enthusiasm for decentralization was so great that it immediately got out of hand. When 6 or 7 or 8, I don't know exactly how many provinces, each on its own, declared for independence, federal goals were displaced by the immediate need to keep Spain from disintegrating. So ended the First Republic after 11 months and 4 presidents. 6 decades later, the Second Spanish Republic lasted 5 years, from 1931 to the outbreak of the Spanish Civil War in 1936. This period saw the government overtaken by socialists, communists, and anarchists. Law and order broke down. However, during the Second Spanish Republic, both Catalonia and the Basque provinces managed to get the central government to sanction statutes of home rule and to reinstate some form of autonomous government. This was achieved by left-wing regional parties. The Galicians in the northwest around Santiago de Compostela, the area that Professor Ligio was talking about, the Galicians also voted for home rule. The election in Galicia took place just 11 days before the outbreak of the war, so there was no time to implement the decisions. Galicia's case, however, is still worth noting. Galicia does not have a tradition of strong local government or even a collective memory of such a system in the past. Galicia does have, however, a separate language. More people in Galicia are reputed to be bilingual than in either Catalonia or the Basque Navarrese country. General Francisco Franco identified regional government with the far left and with the anarchy of the Spanish Second Republic. Hence, when he rose to power, he put an end to the autonomous governments. The only exception was Navarre, where a pale reflection, just a little bit of the Fueros was retained because Navarre was instrumental in the national uprising against the Republic in 1936. Thus, through thick and thin, over the centuries, the former little tiny Pyrenean kingdom of Navarre was the only area of Spain to retain, going all the way back to the Middle Ages, an uninterrupted tradition of political and fiscal autonomy. Franco also resumed the old repression of cultural particularism. His policies were the same as those of monarchs of an earlier time, but he had more advanced technology to implement them thoroughly. So it was serious. Newspapers published in any language other than Castile were outlawed, and they did not circulate freely. Academic instruction in any other tongue was illegal. No vernacular language could be heard on the premises of any government building anywhere in the land, even in private conversations. Literally, I grew up in Franco, Spain, and I did not know that people in Galicia spoke another language. That is how the media was controlled. It was a surprise when I went to Galicia many years later and found out people speaking something I thought had died out in the 19th century. Literally. When Prince Juan Carlos was installed as king in November of 1975, after General Franco's 35-year dictatorship, regionalism and demands for self-government had been gaining momentum throughout Europe for 10 or 15 years. The devolution of home rule in Catalonia and the Basque provinces, or Euskal Herria, was taken for granted. The case of Galicia was not as clear, but was debatable. The first prime minister actually chosen by the new ruler, Adolfo Suárez, was quick to take steps toward creating pre-autonomous governments in Catalonia and Euskal Herria, kind of transition. The unexpected, however, was that in the mid and late 70s, all of Spain was swept with a wave of autonomy fever, fiebre autonómica. As Don Juan Carlos and his new team began to dismantle General Franco's regime and to restore democracy, political diversification and cultural particularism were in the air. Almost overnight, democracy and decentralization became equated in the minds of the people all over the country, not just in the politicized northern areas that have their own languages. Thus, the new constitution, promulgated in 1978, reflected the mood of the times. It established the principle of home rule, outlined which powers would be retained by the central government, which would be handed over to the new regional establishments, and which could be negotiated on a case-to-case basis. Education, interestingly, was one of the latter. Today, Spain is made up of 17 self-governing regions known as autonomous communities, or autonomies. There is a great variety in the scope of powers of self-government in these regions, although each one has its own statute, president, government, legislature, and Supreme Court. Most of them also have their own television stations. They've made a big deal about that. Starting in March of 1979, Madrid systematically transferred numerous public functions to the regions. The movement is now more or less finished and was far from smooth. During the process, fears that the country was disintegrating led to many reactions. The most famous, of course, was the attempted military coup in February of 1981. Now that the autonomous governments have been functioning for a few years, there are, naturally, many questions and concerns, and I want to mention a few. Just state them so you'll know what they are. Number one, there are gray areas in the Constitution that still need to be clarified. Spain has entered a phase of debating about these areas. Two, there are overlapping jurisdictions that need to be worked out, and especially a duplication of bureaucracies that must be eliminated. As of now, the central government has kept more employees than initially agreed, while the regions have hired many more than stipulated. Three, by law, the national government, the state, cannot control the budgets of the autonomous governments. So far, the latter have been on a spending spree. Hopefully, this profligacy will prove itself to have merely been the euphoria and inexperience of the first moment. Nonetheless, Madrid is concerned because membership in the European Economic Community depends to a great extent on economic performance. Four, the areas that now have the most self-government, Euskal Herria, that is to say the Basque Country, Navarre, and Catalonia, are also the richest areas in the country. Since 1985, serious attempts have been made to aid the poorer areas. In effect, the wealthy regions are helping the less fortunate ones. Will the relationship last as long as needed? Number five, the new system of self-government has not ended the secessionist movements in the Basque Country, Navarre, and Catalonia. This is by far the most serious concern. Separatists, more or less, run the autonomous governments in these areas. Furthermore, vaguely right-of-center elected separatists are openly pressured by left-wing secessionists, by the Marxist separatist parties that support terrorism, namely Herri Batasuna in the Basque Country and Esquerra Republicana in Catalonia. And six, in the Constitution, the armed forces are given the natural role of defending the country, but they also are given the role of guaranteeing the internal constitutional arrangements themselves. Hence, the specter of military force is a corollary of worry over separatism. Thus, to summarize, the Spaniards are very proud of the tremendous transformation of their country. Europe is impressed. One of the most centralized countries on the continent has become one of the least centralized in just a few years without a major national trauma. Spaniards feel sure that most of the remaining transitional problems can be worked out easily. However, there still remain two major concerns. First, if haggling over gray areas in the Constitution leads to constant demands for more power by the autonomous communities, amendments would be needed, or more likely, a new constitution. Well, Spain's already had 10 or 11 constitutions in less than 200 years, so it doesn't really want another one. This one was easy, but the next transition might be very difficult, so this is scary. Secondly, the inability of Spain's grand experiment in home rule to dissolve the separatist movements that have plagued her for a century has troublesome implications for other countries. Europe is watching carefully. To end, I would like to add a personal observation that may be of particular interest to members of the Philadelphia Society and other societies who are gathered here today. Spain's system of home rule is not intended to limit government, to reduce the public sphere. Centralization imposed by the capital. Thank you.